Persons listening to this show should experience varying degrees of euphoria and might radiate a warm glow of truth from their entire being. This phenomenon sometimes lasts hours after a typical brain massage. If you are listening with another lights on listener and they begin to glow, don't be concerned. This is a phenomenon normally associated with Pastor Scheidbach's patented brain massage technique and merely means the truth has set them free. The devil beware. Pastor Scheidbach is on the air.
Stand by.
The Brain Massage Show is about to blow your mind.
Hello, I'm Jerry Scheidbach, pastor at the Lighthouse and your brain masseur. Get ready for your brain massage.
Truth served here, flavored with delectable wit, succulent sagacity, luscious logic, a gourmet meal for the mind.
Okay, I'll talk about the latest Bundy brouhaha. Much ado about nothing. Is China set to become the next center of Christianity? You know, the center of Christianity has moved from time to time, beginning in Jerusalem, and then not long after the first evangelism explosion occurred following the resurrection, it moved to Antioch. And from there, it appears to have moved to Ephesus, then to Rome, and then to Britain, and then to America. And that's kind of a summary of its development. So the question is, will it go east this time, or just continue its navigation west until it goes back around to east? Anyway, is it going to move to China? While we have about 159 million Protestant or evangelical Christians in the United States, according to 2010 numbers, and that number is in decline, China, which had only about 1 million believers in 1949, is on track today to reach something like 160 million by 2025, according to Professor Yang at Purdue U. And that is with most of the evangelical growth in China steadily increasing over the last 40 years. Christianity on the incline in China, on the decline here. The problem is that mere numbers do not a Christian nation make. For example, 41% of Americans self-identify as born-again Christians, and about 72% identify as Christians generally, but that does not a Christian nation make, now does it? Add to this the vastly larger general population in China, and you begin to see that the impact of 160 million believers is greatly diluted in a population numbered in the billions. Nevertheless, for many years, long before it became popular to speculate about China's growing population of evangelicals, I was suggesting that prophetically it could happen. In the Old Testament period, expressions like holy nation and peculiar people were used to speak of Israel. Now, according to Peter, these terms identify God's own family of born-again ones. He calls them his holy nation or his peculiar people. And that would refer to those who have repented of their sins, confessed Jesus as Lord, and in faith believed on him for the remission of their sins. According to John, it's those who have received him who are given the power to become the children of God. These comprise his holy nation, his peculiar people today. And then to the institution of the church, which Jesus organized and established in the earth, he gave the keys of the kingdom. And as God gives the kingdom to whomever he pleases, and that is the divine right to rule under the auspices of Romans 13, which declares that all power is ordained of God, and also from Daniel 4, where Daniel repeatedly declares that God is ultimately sovereign over all creation and over all kingdoms of the earth, and who independently decides who will have the kingdom, that is, right to rule in the earth. Well, anyway, he gave the keys of the kingdom to his churches. Which keys include preaching the gospel that directs sinners to the door of the kingdom, which is Jesus Christ, who said, I am the door, who upon entering are translated into the kingdom of Christ Jesus, the ruler of heaven and earth. All right? So anyway, a nation is judged according to how that nation treats the least of these, his people. And if such a nation receives the gospel and will bow the knee to Jesus Christ as King of kings and Lord of lords, then that nation will prosper, be raised up, as God exalts that nation whose God is the Lord. And that nation will be empowered with the power of kingdom authority and will be blessed. Otherwise, they will be doomed finally to be destroyed. Now, my point is this. During the prophetic period called the fourth kingdom in which we live, the center of that power can move from place to place and from nation to nation without changing the holder of the kingdom. That's interesting. Jesus Christ is the king of the fourth kingdom. Although Satan and his minions and his children of disobedience object and deny the doctrine of Christ, which, by the way, stipulates that Jesus is the Christ, the promised Messiah, the ruler of heaven and earth, who would come and take up the government upon his shoulder and rule upon the throne of his father David. and that this is the doctrine of Christ, and many believers today are actively denying this doctrine. They are denying the right of Jesus to rule the earth today. And they have gone so far as even to join the chorus of the children of disobedience who send forth word after our temporarily departed Lord, saying, "We will not have this man to reign over us." What I'm saying is awfully deep, and you got to think about it a little while. This really does totally intersect current events today and the dynamics in the politics of this country. All of this is to say that it is totally possible for China to become the next center of Christianity, providing the believers in China assert their inalienable rights, declare Jesus is Lord in the power of the kingdom, that is the power of the Holy Ghost sent down from heaven, and resist tyranny in the name of Jesus by the sword of the Spirit, which is the Word of God. Now, I'm going to preach a very important message Sunday night, and I hope you will come. I've been thinking for some years now about a proper Christian response to the rising spirit of Antichrist in our country, and what exactly are Christians expected to do about it? What is the proper Christian approach to all of this? Answering questions about a proper Christian approach to prepping, for example. And I consider myself a prepper, by the way. And we'll consider a biblical approach to all of this. And we've been wanting to start posting my messages, especially the Issachar Report messages that I preach on Sunday nights, on our website. But I'm still waiting for the web designer to get back to me with the tutorials I need so I can train somebody to do that anyway. China could become the next holder of the kingdom and rise to a glory exceeding that enjoyed by America in her past, if she will bow the knee to Jesus as Lord and quit trying to elevate the state above the stars of God and aspiring to make it like the Most High. The kingdom is about to be shifted. A major paradigm shift in the kingdom of men is coming. And we know from the Bible that the Antichrist spirit desires to push all nations into a one-world government ruled by a supreme dictator that is under the power of Satan. And that goes way back to Nimrod. And there are a great number of Nimrodites out there today, many embedded deeply in our own government, by the way. However, we also know that the scheme will continue to be thwarted by the presence of Christians. That's real ones, by the way, those in whom is the Spirit of Jesus Christ. It is an influence through them that restrains the spirit of Antichrist. And every time the enemy almost gets it all together, you know, to pull the world under Satan, well, God enters in through a revival of his people or by other means and unravels the scheme. I mean, this goes way back to the Tower of Babel, and it continues on until today. It's always the same. Satan labors tirelessly to put everything in place to take over the kingdoms of the world and set up his man of sin over them, which we know is going to happen someday, but when? See, and just about the time you think everything's lost, revival breaks out somewhere. The Spirit of Jesus Christ starts flowing through the open bellies of believers and washes out across the country where it begins to flood out over the world, and the Spirit of Antichrist is pushed back for another generation, sometimes two. And this will continue so long as believers are here. Now, either we will experience the rapture very soon, where we are removed, or there will be another such revival of the remnant. But remember, my dear friends, it can get pretty dark before the dawn. In fact, it always gets darkest just before the dawn. Consider the increasing strength of the Antichrist spirit in this country. Just one example of hundreds that could be presented, the darkness of homosexuality rising and controlling the minds and hearts of so many, a disease-ridden behavior, a filthy practice that nature itself abhors and rebukes with all manner of afflictions, and Satan loves to promote specifically because it debases man, defaces the divine image he bears, contradicts nature, and defies nature's God. It opens the door, really, it opens the floodgates for all manner of adjunct evils to further degrade the family. And it's a movement that engenders deep anger and induces violence in our culture, distorting the reason and dismantling the very foundation of our liberties. So that to protect what are not rights, true inalienable rights are destroyed. In the name of advancing the perverse and unhealthy and unnatural lifestyle of the homosexual, Christians are being persecuted and driven out of the public square, forced to choose between their faith and their livelihood in many cases. I mean, homosexual activists, angry at God and at anyone who holds to traditional Christian values, and in hatred for those who oppose their filthy behavior, they attack Christians and seek to drive them out of the public square. For example, Christians are forced out of the following businesses because of the attack of angry, hateful homosexuals: photography, baking, florists, even broadcasting, counseling, innkeeping, teaching. Even though the homosexual can find photographers who could service their so-called weddings without violating their conscience, no. The homosexual goes out purposely and finds a Christian photographer to harass them and try to hurt them in some way. Even if the Christian politely explains their dilemma in the matter, the homosexual hatefully demands they violate their conscience and desires to force them to accept and approve their perverse lifestyle. Now, is that right? I ask you. Even those who think homosexual marriage and all that is okay, is this proper behavior? What happened to we reserve the right to refuse service to anyone? Well, it's gone, isn't it? This whole thing reminds me of Sodom, you know, when the Sodomites were out in force, determined to force themselves on Lot and his guests. It seems to be characteristic of that crowd to force themselves on others. I'm sure there are exceptions, but generally speaking, the gay rights movement is one in which they are trying to force people to accept them, force their beliefs on others, and they do it all the while hiding behind a facade of victimization, as if for a photographer to say, I would rather not participate in a homosexual wedding for personal reasons, that somehow that amounts to forcing his religion on them, and you suing them, taking the court and forcing them to do something against their conscience is not forcing your opinion on them. This thing has just gotten way out of hand. It's a bunch of nonsense, and anyone with sense knows it, but that's the problem. You see, this whole mess is compromising persons otherwise of good sense into behaving nonsensically. So we do need to be prepared, and we need to know what is our responsibility as believers during times like these, when the power of darkness is in ascendancy. So come Sunday night and find out. Now I need to conclude the first segment. Yes, I will address the Bundy Bumble, but I don't have time for it right now. Some few years ago, a couple of families showed up at the lighthouse wanting to meet the brain masseur. The wives spoke of sitting in the car together, listening to one of my more mind-blowing shows, and described the experience as causing them to glow inside. Yeah. Sometimes we get enthusiastic and perhaps go over the top in our descriptions of something that inspires us. I've done the same thing, but these are not the only ones who've said such things about the brain massage. And in order to explain this phenomenon, I put together what I call the science of the brain massage. It goes like this.
The science of a brain massage. The brain masseur uses words like fingers to massage your gray matter, forming insights in the mind that stimulate the pituitary to signal the adrenal to release noneparephrine neurotransmitters and to fire these neurons through the sympathetic nervous system affecting the heart. The skilled brain masseur uses incisive logic to arrest our attention and nuanced razor-sharp rhetoric to cut away the tangled knots in our brains. When these knots are removed, the electrical impulse of stimulating insights fire the neurotransmitters so they can leap the synapse gaps. This generates a sparkling effect in the brain that can cause the countenance of a brain massage listener to glow. Additionally, sudden outbursts of energy caused by the release of glucose throughout the body increases the heart rate, while the pituitary gland in the brain releases all five types of dopamine at once. And this creates that sense of euphoria experienced by many brain massage listeners. And that's the science of a brain massage.
Get ready for your brain massage.
Hello, I'm Jerry Scheidbach, pastor of the Lighthouse, your brain masseur, and Paul Revere's lantern lighter, lighting the lamps in the church belfry arcs, signaling the enemies on the march. An enemy that would steal from us our liberties. The Bundy Blunder. Have you heard about this? If you listen to Hannity, I'm sure you have. I like Hannity. He's without question one of my favorites. Hannity, one of Bundy's, by the way, most assertive supporters, is now disgusted with Bundy. What happened? By the way, in case you don't know it, Bundy is that rancher in Nevada who faced down the Bureau of Land Management thugs that came rolling in, confiscating his cattle and threatening bodily harm to his family. And I've spoken to that in prior shows. For some reason, Bundy decided, or he got tricked into weighing in on the whole race issue in America, and he made some comments to the effect that he sometimes wonders whether blacks were not actually better off under slavery than they are today, being as they are now virtual slaves of the Democrats. He didn't use the word Democrat, of course, that's my word. He offered some supporting observations, such as at least then they had, quote, something to do, end quote, and their, quote, families were intact, end quote, or something to that effect. And it was a bumbling mess in which that foolish dear man made several comments that proved to be fodder for the left to totally dismiss him as a racist bigot. Okay, first rule. Make certain you actually understand what someone is saying before you start accusing him of, well, in this case, racism. So here is exactly what Bundy did say. And we'll use the comments, by the way, that he made when he was explaining himself to, who was this, Peter Schiff. On the Peter Schiff show, Bundy explained, quote, "I said, I'm wondering if they're better off under government subsidy and the young women are having abortions, their young men are in jail, and their older women and children are sitting out on the cement porch without nothing to do," end quote. This is something Bundy told to Schiff, and it goes on, quote, "I'm wondering, are they happier now under this government subsidy system than they were when they were slaves and they were able to have their family structure together and chickens and doggies and the people have something to do? In my mind," this is continuing his quote, by the way, "in my mind, I'm wondering, are they better off being slaves in that sense or better off being slaves to the United States government in the sense of subsidy," end quote. Wow. And that was his explanation of what he said. Oh, my Lord. I didn't hear the interview or the original statement he's now explaining. And I picked this up from Newsmax, which I rate at about 8 out of 10 for accuracy in reporting. I've never found them to misquote anyone, although occasionally I think they kind of get off point, as with the Chelsea pregnancy thing. But anyway, they are always truthful in their citations. So what was Bundy's defense against those accusing him of racism? It sounds like he dug his hole deeper, doesn't it? Now, Hannity went off on the 67-year-old inexperienced in public affairs rancher and severely criticized him, calling his remarks, quote, repugnant, end quote, and expressing frustration over the fact that Bundy has indeed shot his own feet off and left those of us who defended him twisting in the wind. So let me massage into your brain some clarifying insights into all of this. First, my friends, it is a mistake to go all in on a situation like the Bundy case too quickly or to go too far in your support for someone like that. And it's for these kinds of reasons. And I usually establish some mitigating statement, you know, early on. I'll offer some caveats, some bunker defense, you know, just in case there's something like this in the story that's going to surface later and embarrass me and those who depend on me for news analysis. And I did that with Bundy, saying stuff like, you know, I don't know the whole story here, but it looks like, and so forth. Also, avoid throwing myself behind an individual. Rather, I go in on the issue. Generally, I separate the personality from the issue I'm addressing so that it's not about Bundy. Rather, it's about an increasing pattern of government acting like a bully, connecting the incident in question to others that show a pattern. So my point here is that, you know, concern about a pattern of government overreach with the Bundy situation being an example is different than coming in behind my buddy, Rancher Bundy, you see. And the reason is obvious. I don't know the guy. The situation developing there is not about who he is. It's not about his opinions about racism. You see, that's how liberals play things. It's a big mistake. The Waco massacre was hidden from the public view by the smoke blown over it about who was David Koresh. So the insane behavior of the feds in that situation, the egregious violation of anything like government restraint, patience in the utilization of force, concern for the safety of innocents that were there, including children, by the way, and just plain old human rights. All of that, by the way, under the direction of Clinton's Janet Reno, and then all of it hidden under a fog of dust that was stirred up about who was David Koresh, which was entirely beside the point. It would not matter if the guy was a blazing lunatic. What they did at Waco was wrong on the fundamental level of law and civil rights and just good sense. And yet we still cannot get justice on the Waco issue precisely because they have succeeded at making it all about the personality cult behind or that was built up around David Koresh and not about the federal government killing innocent children in a rash exhibition of raw governmental power. The same thing is beginning here. As the personality of Bundy becomes the focus, many Americans will begin to simply look the other way. Friends, don't focus on the personalities in these situations. Focus on the issues of justice that are in play. Stay focused on the right and wrong of it all, not on the personalities involved. Otherwise, your judgment is based on respect of persons, and if you're a Christian, that's a no-no. And it always leads to injustice, by the way. Now, second, if you are concerned about the personality behind a situation, well, I think it's a good idea to wait and find out about all that before you jump on the wagon. I mean, ask the right questions, by the way, and ask them up front before you start throwing your support behind it. Has anyone asked Bundy this question? Mr. Bundy, do you think blacks should be enslaved, end quote? I mean, right? Or how about this one? Mr. Bundy, do you think slavery is a just institution and that blacks should be held as property, end quote? Now, frankly, I don't know who Bundy is, and I don't know how he would answer these questions. And no one knows because no one is asking these questions. They're just jumping to confusions and assumptions. Now, these are clarifying questions because, you see, the truth is, Bundy did not say he believed in slavery, nor did he say he thinks blacks should go back into slavery, nor did he say slavery is a good thing. Nor did he say slavery was good for the black people. You see, but people don't know how to listen anymore, it seems to me. In my work, I do a lot of talking, yeah. I say something about almost everything. And it's not unusual for people to hear me say something I didn't say. I'm not kidding. I mean, there are times when in conversation with my family, we marvel that someone insists I said something that they know, and of course I know, I didn't say. How does this happen? Well, often it happens because people misunderstand what you meant by what you said, and they become convinced that you said what they thought you meant. Follow what I'm saying here. They'll even frame it in their own words, when really what they're doing is framing an interpretation of what you said. They'll even quote you back with their own words, which are actually, again, an interpretation of what you meant and not what you actually said. They will say, you said, and I quote, blah, 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 end quote. And then you say, I didn't say that. But you see, it's what they interpreted was your meaning. And then they put the words in your mouth. Other times what happens is they hear what they are expecting you to say or what serves their purpose in an argument. In other words, in cooler moments when there is no emotional overtone coloring the whole thing, no other agenda at work, the same person would probably have heard you clearly enough. But in the heat of debate or when defensive or otherwise motivated, now they're listening for something and they're hearing what they're listening for. Now, the same weird phenomenon will occur where they are adamant and insistent that you said, quote, and end quote. It's something they can respond to. It's a convenient way to dodge what you're actually saying many times. And this is, of course, human nature. It's dishonest. But again, human nature being what it is. Anyway, there's more to all of this. But I like to use clarifying questions such as, Mr. Bundy, are you saying that you believe in slavery? Or, Mr. Bundy, are you saying blacks should be owned by masters and used as property? Now, my guess is that Mr. Bundy would be appalled that anyone thought that is what he meant by his comments. However, I don't know that for sure. But if you're concerned about this sort of thing, well, you should certainly have had him interviewed before you threw your support behind him. Mr. Bundy, we are concerned about what is happening to you here in Nevada. I need to ask you a few questions before I stand up for you against what appears to be government thuggery. First, are you a racist? Second, are you a member of any weird cult? Third, is there anything at all in your life that could come out that would prove to be an embarrassment to me? And now you begin to see what's wrong with all this, don't you? You see, because really none of these things actually make a bit of difference in the real issues underneath this whole Bundy BLM standoff. Now, here's another bit of advice. If this sort of thing is very important to you and you want to lift up a 67-year-old rancher to become, you know, the poster child, let's say, for a movement or a public issue you want to address, well, then I suggest you hire public relations experts to follow the guy all over and teach him how to handle himself with snooping press and a prying press, right? How to protect himself from those on the left who are going to go after a guy like this. He becomes a huge target. And they're going to start looking for something they can use to dismiss him, to create a whole bunch of smoke all over the issue and behind which or under which the government can hide from the public eye. This rancher does not know what he's doing. My take on his statements, that is until I get answers to my clarifying questions, is that Mr. Bundy is not a politician. Yeah, he doesn't know how to frame his comments for the general public consumption, you know, with sensitivity to all the right issues and how to avoid sounding like he's saying something he's not saying and all that. I mean, that takes either a great deal of natural talent, an instinct for lying like Obama and Clinton, or it takes a whole lot of training and years of cultivating a sort of rhetorical environmental awareness, if you will. Anyway, in other words, kids, what I do is serious business, and you shouldn't try it at home without training or some supervision. Listen carefully to what Bundy did actually say, and I think you'll agree. It was a bumbling mess, but the fact is many black leaders have said similar things, only with a great deal more sensitivity and savvy to the issues and to the environment in which they're saying it. Okay. Now, I've heard great black leaders lament that their own people were being kept on the democratic plantation, and again, my word democratic, and I've explained it before, the democratic plantation through government largesse. Now, I've heard many black leaders lament the collapse of the family structure in the black community owing directly to this dependency upon the government. And I've heard black leaders say that the family structure was actually stronger during slavery than it is today. I've heard black leaders say all these things. Of course, no one with sense would say it the way Bundy did, and nobody with any brains would say they were better off as slaves. First, because clearly that isn't true, and there are many, many successful black families that give witness to that. Such a statement is absurd on the face of it, and those who might make such a statement would direct it as a stinging rebuke to the blacks and the leadership among the blacks who are allowing the people to be treated like, you know, they're owned by the Democrats. Like the Democrats are their new masses, and they're manipulated into blind loyalty to the Democratic Party through the promise of governmental handouts and misguided sense of revenge for slavery, which these Democrats constantly foment. Now, anyway, in conclusion, I want to read some quotes from a great mind, and you'll appreciate the relevance of these quotes in a moment. Quote, "Much of the social history of the Western world over the past three decades has been a history of replacing what worked with what sounded good," end quote. That's good. Here's another one. Quote, "It is amazing that people who think we cannot afford to pay for doctors, hospitals, and medication somehow think that we can afford to pay for doctors, hospitals, medication, and a government bureaucracy to administer it," end quote. I love this guy. Quote, "It is hard to imagine a more stupid or more dangerous way of making decisions than by putting those decisions in the hands of people who pay no price for being wrong," end quote. Eh? How about that? Now, here's another one, quote, all from the same man, by the way. "If you have always believed that everyone should play by the same rules and be judged by the same standards, that would have gotten you labeled a radical 60 years ago, a liberal 30 years ago, and a racist today," end quote. Wow. Quote, "I have never understood why it is greed to want to keep the money you've earned, but not greed to want to take somebody else's money," end quote. Oh, yeah. Brilliant. And here, quote, "If you have been voting for politicians who promise to give you goodies at someone else's expense, then you have no right to complain when they take your money and give it to someone else, including themselves," end quote. And here's another one. Quote, "One of the consequences of such notions as entitlements is that people who have contributed nothing to society feel that society owes them something, apparently just for being nice enough to grace us with their presence," end quote. Zing, pow, bang, punch. Holy wisdom, Batman. That's telling them. Here's one more. Referring to Obama, he said, quote, "I think this man really does believe he can change the world, and people like that are infinitely more dangerous than mere crooked politicians," end quote. Amen to that, my friend. And who is our mystery wise man? Well, my dear friends, none other than Thomas Sowell, a truly great Black American. Come Sunday night for my next installment in the Issachar Report. I'll discuss a Christian perspective on the Prepper Movement. I have lit the lamps in the church belfry arch, and now you call and let me know that you see they are on. Call 1-888-770-8000. That's 1-888-770-8000. Leave a message for me in our listener response hotline. For those who prefer it, you may email me by going to our website at thebrainmassageshow.com. Again, thebrainmassageshow.com, all one word, lowercase, you know the drill. Love to hear from my audience. Your input is helpful to me in the preparation of future shows. God bless you. God save America. And I'll see you in church.
We Christians complain when our political leaders compromise their values, show contempt for the truth, and forsake the beliefs of our founders. Yet many Christians compromise their own values and beliefs to stay in churches that have forsaken their founders. The fact is, Christian, you are the light of the world and the salt of the earth. Haven't you noticed that every corruption we complain about in our government began in our churches? The answer is clear. Thus saith the Lord, "Stand ye in the ways and see, and ask for the old paths, where is the good way, and walk therein, and ye shall find rest for your souls." Jeremiah 6:16. Lighthouse Baptist Church has answered the call to return to the old paths. Will you? Join us this Sunday. Call 805-347-9887 or go to santamarialighthouse.org for more information. Churches have led our nation toward the ruin we face, and it's up to the churches to lead us back from destruction. God calls his people back to the old paths. Lighthouse Baptist Church is inviting God's people to join us on the old path. Call 347-9887 or go to santamarialighthouse.org for more information. For a complete brain massage experience, tune in Saturdays at 7:30 a.m. and go to www.thebrainmassageshow.com. The Brain Masseur is preparing to massage your brain with stimulating insights.